You will not learn this information through the normal forums. You will not learn this information through public education. There are lots of people out there that are capable of sharing this information with you, but you're going to have to seek it out. By embracing these financial strategies, I can build a future where I am in control, dedicating my time, my energy to what truly matters to me and what I believe matters to God, rather than renting my time out to a boss. Welcome to Nursing Real Wealth. Today, we have a slightly different format with just me hanging out with you. We're working on creating a few inspiring episodes with some of my partners, but this week, it's just me taking some time to share a bit more of my story. Some of you know it, or at least a portion of you do, but I wanted to share the journey into investing and give an update as to what I'm doing today as an investor. I've been a nurse for 14 years. My career started as a floor nurse on a cardiac telemetry unit. For 7 years, I dedicated myself to my patients, learning the intricacies of cardiac care and experiencing the highs and lows that come with that territory. And nursing is a demanding profession, both physically and emotionally, but it is often very rewarding. But in 2022, I found myself in a management position after years of, working primarily as a floor nurse, but despite my dedication to my staff and patients, I was constantly tired. I was stressed. Staffing issues and patient ratios were always a challenge. The pandemic exacerbated the situation. But it became really clear to me that I was fundamentally at odds with the American health system as it is today, and I needed a change. My desire for change stemmed not just from a financial reason, but from a deep-seated need for security, freedom, control over my time, and ultimately my choices. So why would a nurse want to leave the field? It's such a rewarding career, right? Serving patients in the community. It's very rewarding. besides, people would often say, isn't it your calling, Justin? You're so good at it. How many times have you heard these kinds of projections about your own career? I heard them almost every day. In fact, I even projected those sentiments onto my own staff, thinking that I was encouraging them to keep pressing on despite the obvious signs of burnout. I realize now that I did this likely because I felt that I had no other alternative to my nursing career, since it was all that I knew. And I normalized the amount of stress that came from constantly working short-staffed. I normalized waking up every hour stressing about what the day would bring. I just figured it was part of the job. I normalize all of the contradictions within our broken healthcare system that prevented me from being able to serve my patients the way that I believed I should. And in regard to being told it's your calling to be a nurse, Justin, you're so good at it, right? I used to nod in agreement to that statement, all the while revolting against it inside of me. In the deepest recesses of my soul, I absolutely hated that statement. I think I agreed because I thought, well, I am good at it and it makes me money. And it's all I know. But I'm also good at writing music. I'm good at singing. I'm good at filmmaking. And I'm good at serving others in many different ways. But deep inside of myself, I knew that I was not called to be trapped in a career for the rest of my life. I am called to serve God, and that can be done with excellence in anything that I do. So to any of my employees who I encouraged to just hang in there rather than listening to understand and possibly encouraging them to explore better options, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Here's my message to nurses. If you are deeply satisfied with your present role, my hat's off to you. and I have the utmost respect for you and what you do and the work that you do. It's very important, and I'm grateful to each and every one of you. But for those of you who feel trapped and don't know what to do because nursing is all you know, or to any other worker for that matter, any other worker who feels trapped in your W-2, I just want you to know there is a path out. There is always another path. And so don't feel trapped and don't ignore that feeling. It's just going to deepen the burnout that you already are feeling. That's something to lean into, to explore, and to try to understand. Where should I go next? I don't buy the idea that you have to be stuck in a career for your whole life. There are so many options out there. And if you're feeling like this is not the place for you, this is not where you should be serving, lean into that and figure that out. I began realizing that my financial future also was not secure. So that was another component that drove me to seek out investing. Like many, I followed conventional advice. You know, work hard, save diligently, invest in a 401k. And for years, I contributed to my work 401k, taking advantage of that employer matching funds. and the goal was to amass, you know, between $2 and $4 million for retirement. But I started taking a really hard look at my financial future and realized that the traditional path is really kind of a broken path and would not provide for the opportunities I wanted. It certainly didn't address the here and the now. And it did not address well the future as well. So, you know, based on what I make right now and the rate of inflation. Okay, so as an example, I just want to give this here. So based on inflation and what I make right now, I would need to make in my retirement years about $225,000 per year at the beginning of retirement to maintain the lifestyle that I have today. So the $225,000 per year would have the buying power when I retire at 65. It would have the buying power roughly of what I make today. And so that works out to about, you know, if I've lived until I'm 90 years old, right? Retire when I'm 65 and I die at 90. If I live that long, then I would need $5.6 million just to cover my cost of living, assuming no crazy calamities happen, right? And, you know, I could attempt to cut costs and live off of just the interest from my investments. And if I applied that 4% rule that typically applies with a retirement, and you only pull out 4%, I could probably live off of about $160,000 a year. That's if I achieve optimal returns and saved a principal in my 401k of $4 million per year, or $4 million total. But remember, I would still have to pay probably about $50,000 per year in income tax on that as well. You know, good old Uncle Sam, he needs to take his cut to fund all of their, you know, successful programs and whatnot and wars. The bottom line is that the math for me was not mathing. And the most viable path I could envision within my current financial approach was to diligently save throughout my life, aiming to accumulate about $4 to $5 million But this strategy would just lead to me being taxed in a higher tax bracket in the future and result in a substantial portion of my hard-earned money going back to the government. And ultimately, this would just mean that I'm living on a suboptimal income compared to my current lifestyle. And the biggest problem is that the trajectory would leave little to no inheritance for my daughter when I pass. When I leave this earth, I would have very little to give to my child. And this is the pattern over and over and over again that I watch happen in the middle class. Okay. We save and save. We live off the 401k, and our children have to do the same thing over and over again, same pathway in order to survive through retirement. And that just bothered me. I don't know how it strikes you, but it bothers me. I don't love that. That's a real problem. But you know, I think the biggest thing that really drives me nuts about this is that the whole system is set up in such a way that the biggest beneficiary of all your years of work and saving is not your family. You know, it's not really yourself either. It's ultimately the government, because there are so many strategically placed taxes that, you know, get you at your income. They get your sales tax, your property tax, and then you get your, you know, your, when you die, you get your death tax, your inheritance taxes, and all of these things. They're all strategically placed so that the government ultimately is the biggest beneficiary of your existence. And really, the middle class is the government's most valuable asset. There is a strong incentive to train citizens to be great workers in the middle class, and they pay for most of the government's pet projects. So after analyzing all of this and just really taking some time to just look at the math and think, okay, this doesn't really work. I just said to myself, there's got to be a better path. And there has to be a way to prevent the government from taking so much of the fruit of my labor from me and my child, my family, my heirs. So I started seeking out a lot of alternative investment strategies, and I would assume, like many entrepreneurs, they sought out all of the different options that are out there, you know, crypto stock, day trading, blah, blah, blah. Amazon drop shipping. Who's done that one? Who's looked into that? And, you know, all of those options can certainly, you know, make you money. You know, what I learned from all of my time digging into this was that the largest percentage of self-made millionaires did it investing in real estate. And so I turned to investors that I was finding and just seeking out and researching on Instagram and YouTube. And for the first time, I really began to understand the difference between active income and passive income. And I realized that while Dave Ramsey's advice is great for budgeting, it is not the path to wealth. And that is what I have been taught most of my life, was, you know, the principles of Dave Ramsey. And so I dug in. I spent a bunch of time just like researching and studying, you know, YouTube University, and just digging in and trying to figure out this information. And from that, I started finding people like, you know, Pace Morby, Ryan Pineda, you know, Russell Brunson, and what I began to learn was just that there's a plethora of other ways to manage wealth that most of us are never taught. And I learned about the power of, for instance, having a trust to hold all of your assets so that you don't own anything on paper. And if structured correctly, the government can't tax you upon your death. Whole life insurance became more than just an insurance policy. It became an infinite bank, a source of flexible finances. Real estate investing, you know, opened my eyes to three really crucial benefits of, three different ways to really utilize real estate to build wealth. I want to dig into these just a little bit more, just to share just a very brief overview of these things for those who don't know much about this. So a trust is a legal entity that holds assets, for the benefit of one or more, you know, beneficiaries. And by placing those assets into a trust, you legally transfer the ownership of those assets to the trust. And then the person who creates the trust can then designate themselves as the trustee and manage the trust. So they retain control over the assets during their lifetime, but it's not really owned by that individual on paper. And so one key benefit of a trust is that it allows you to avoid, you know, probate, which is the legal process of validating a will. And probate can be very time consuming, very expensive, potentially reducing the amount of your estate that actually gets passed on to your heirs. And so by placing these assets into a trust and setting this trust up properly, the assets in the trust just immediately and directly pass to your beneficiaries upon your death. Totally bypass probate and the craziness, nonsense that comes with that. Additionally, certain types of trust have additional benefits, like an irrevocable trust can provide tax benefits. So an irrevocable trust, they're trusts that can't be changed. They can't be revoked once they're created. So when you transfer assets into an irrevocable trust, those assets are no longer considered part of your taxable estate. This means that when you pass away, the value of the assets in the trust is not subject to estate tax. And I am absolutely going to put this disclaimer in there. I'm not a CPA, so don't take this as tax advice. You got to go and talk to a CPA. But this is, you know, fairly widely known information. I might get some of the nuance of it incorrect, but hopefully what this will do for you is just cause you to go, interesting. I'm going to look into that. Go dig it out from folks that know this even deeper. But I want to expose you to the idea. This is an idea that I was not exposed to, right? And they're extremely helpful principles, concepts that broaden your perspective and broaden your understanding of what is truly possible. Let's talk about whole life insurance. I want to get into that really quickly here. Now, this one's one that has some debate around it, but what you'll find is most wealthy people do leverage some sort of whole life insurance. So why? Why? Because to the average end user, whole life insurance is just a really expensive ripoff insurance, right? You got $100,000 worth of insurance and it costs you what, you know, 100 and some odd bucks a month. And you're like, dang, term insurance, I could pay what, you know, 30 bucks ish a month and get $1 million policy. Why would I invest in whole life insurance? Well, let me tell you, most people are not investing in whole life insurance predominantly for that death benefit, though the death benefit is, you know, there and certainly is another added value. But really, whole life insurance is a type of permanent life insurance that provides coverage for your entire life as long as the premiums obviously are paid. And in addition to providing a death benefit for your beneficiaries upon your death, whole life insurance also accumulates a cash value over time, which is very similar to a high yield savings account. If structured properly, a whole life policy will allow you to overfund that cash value portion of your account, and it will grow typically at an annualized rate. I think somewhere around 4% is pretty common. Some policies, depending on how they're structured, might actually do better than that. Some may do, you know, a smaller annualized rate, but roughly around that 4% range, which is really similar to a high yield savings account, right? So why would we want to do one over the other? You know, I could do a high yield savings account and it's just in my bank, or I could do this whole life. Why would I want the complexity of a whole life? Well, the valuable difference between high yield savings account and the cash value of a whole life insurance policy is that whole life cash value grows tax deferred, meaning that you don't pay taxes on the growth as long as it remains inside the policy. And there's really no reason to take it outside of the policy because of what I'm going to talk about in just a second. But before we get there, this tax advantage helps you maximize that growth of the cash value, which allows you to build wealth, you know, more efficiently, right? So you got your money in a high yield savings account. Any of that growth, interest rate, annualized growth inside that account is taxable. Anything within the whole life is not. So, the value of this comes into play when we're talking about accessing that cash. So, how do you access the cash in that account? You don't access it the same way that you would a high yield account, right? High yield savings account. In a high yield savings account, you go and take the money out of the account, all right? And that money is no longer in that account, right? And so the yield on that account diminishes because there is less capital, less cash in the account, right? Okay. With a whole life cash value account, the way you access it is that you borrow against the cash value of the policy. So you use it as a source of funds for investments. You can use it for a source of funds in emergencies or other financial needs. And this flexibility allows you to access funds when you need them without having to sell off assets or disrupt your investment strategy. So when you borrow from your cash value, you're issuing a loan from yourself to yourself, and the interest paid on the loan goes back to who? You, yourself. So this is commonly referred to as infinite banking, and it's a strategy that's used often by the wealthy. You know, typically you pay yourself back at a rate of about 5 to 8%. Now, you got to ask yourself this. Would you rather borrow from a bank and pay the bank 5 to 8% interest? Or would you rather pay yourself 5 to 8% interest and be able to keep that? I know my answer. Besides, this can be a place to store money that you could use to put down as a down payment on a piece of real estate that pays you a much higher return on investment than 5%. So you arbitrage your own money. Anyway, by leveraging that cash value, though, in this way, you can create a source of financing that is really independent of traditional lenders. And it really provides greater control, greater flexibility for your finances. And this strategy is particularly attractive to the wealthy because it allows them to access funds without liquidating their assets, triggering taxable events, and really saving them a lot of money on taxes and preserving that wealth for future generations. Oh, and there's one more thing I forgot to tell you. The cash value in whole life insurance policy is really protected from creditors if it's structured correctly. And if you're using it correctly, it's protected from creditors, which means that because it's life insurance, it cannot be taken away from you in a lawsuit. Your high yield savings account, it could be. Whole life, no. So would you rather have, you know, $100,000 sitting in a high yield savings account, or would you rather have it stuck away into a life insurance account that no one can take away from you? I want to move on to real estate and what captured my attention with real estate and what is of great value. And to all of my real estate investor friends that are, you know, listening here, you know all this stuff. But my audience is bigger than just investors. It includes friends. It includes former nursing, buddies who are trying to figure out their path as well. And so I want to share these ideas and plant the seed, at least, that might allow you to think, there's an opportunity here, and maybe I should research this even more. So this is a broad overview. But the three main ways, like the big ways that really captured my attention for how you can build wealth in real estate, are the appreciation of the asset, the depreciation that the government recognizes about the asset that allows you to write off taxes, and then principal pay down. So let me explain them all. Market appreciation. So over time, real estate tends to increase in value due to factors around inflation, demand, and improvements to the property and surrounding areas. The overall annualized rate of appreciation for real estate in the United States is roughly about 3 to 5% above inflation, with some markets appreciating much more. Housing prices, this is one reason why I think this is a very stable place to put your money. Housing prices have only crashed twice in the last 96 years, with home prices, sorry, I didn't mean to send balloons up, but there we go. Cheers. Home prices have only dropped twice, what I was saying there. They've only dropped twice in the last like 26 years. So, or 96 years. They dropped 30% during the Great Depression during the 1930s and 27% during the Great Recession around 2008. But overarchingly, home prices have consistently risen year over year over year. So there's an abundance of evidence that holding real estate investments long-term, you benefit from this appreciation and you build equity in the property. There's a value in the property that grows over time. The next thing is, when you invest in real estate, you're primarily going to be putting somebody in there. You're going to be putting a tenant or somebody to live in there, or if it's an Airbnb, also a tenant, but short-term renter or a midterm rental. You know, there's a lot of different strategies that you could take, but the biggest thing is you get principal pay down, which means that as your tenant pays rent and you take a portion of that rent and you pay it towards the mortgage, the principal of the loan is paying down. All right. So you got the principal of the loan going down and you got the appreciation rising. And what you have in the middle is a wedge of equity that is growing and growing at a rapid rate. Right. So you're not just depending on the appreciation growing at, say, 5%. You're depending on the appreciation growing at 5% and then that principal pay down coming down. So that growth, that equity growth, is a very significant growth. The next piece, though, that is really cool, and this is why most wealthy people love real estate, it's because of the depreciation. So while the market is going up in value, the government recognizes that the property is getting older and it's going to need repairs. So the roof is going to need repair. The water heater is going to need repair. The furnace, blah, 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 right? So the IRS allows you to depreciate the value of the property over its useful lifetime. Even if the property is appreciating in value on the market, the government allows you to write it off as depreciation, right? And this depreciation expense can be used to offset the rental income, which reduces your taxable income from the property. And depreciation could be a really valuable tax benefit for real estate investors to reduce the overall tax burden. In addition to that, you can get into all the fancy stuff with bonus depreciation, which is something that is just a powerhouse, where you're able to do a cost segregation study on the property and potentially write off a massive percentage of the total property's value in year one, which allows you to take a massive tax write-off as well. So you might be asking yourself, though, if this is so good, if all of these options are so good, why isn't this taught in the public schools? And my question back to you would be, why on earth would they want to teach this in public schools? The government certainly stands to gain much more by training people to be great taxpayers and great workers rather than utilizing advanced financial strategies for building wealth, rather than teaching that, rather than empowering somebody to know how to do that. Government elites would be more than happy to know all of these tax plays and play them themselves and keep them a secret from those who work and pay taxes, so that the government can fund all of their delightful programs, right? The bottom line is this. You will not learn this information through the normal forums. You will not learn this information through public education, right? You will always find out this information through methods that are not widely available to the general public as an education source. You're going to have to find it through something like YouTube, where you connect with somebody who is an investor, right? Somebody who's putting this information out. Why are they putting it out? Because they want you to know about this valuable opportunity, right? They want you to understand that there is an alternative pathway. And so you'll always have to seek this information out. But the information is available. It's just not going to be available in places that you would expect it, right? And so the lessons you're being taught, the lessons that I was taught about finances, they are the common lessons. They are the lessons that the majority of us are being taught. But I had to seek out information, and you will have to seek out information if you want to learn additional strategies. That information is readily available, but it is going to have to be something that you absorb through your own research, digging into, individuals who are reputable on, YouTube, Instagram, you name it. There are lots of people out there that are capable of sharing this information with you, but you're going to have to seek it out. The reality is, I chose to invest and strategically minimize my taxes as best as I can, and to grow my strategies for doing that, because it allows me to break free from a career that does not ignite my passion at all. This path empowers me to create a life that's filled with purpose, freedom, and the pursuit of the desires of my heart, the things that God has laid on my heart to do. And so by embracing these financial strategies, I can build a future where I'm in control, dedicating my time, my energy to what truly matters to me, and what I believe matters to God, rather than renting my time out to a boss. Renting my time out to a boss. Let that sink in. After months of networking, mentorship, and investing in masterminds with multimillionaires and even a billionaire, I have forged friendships and business relationships with hundreds of like-minded individuals who have achieved the level of control and success that I aspire to. These connections have been invaluable. They've provided me with insight, knowledge, and have fueled my growth. And I've taken a significant step in my investment journey by reallocating my entire retirement account into real estate. So, you know, my hospital has merged countless times. Everybody that's local knows that the name has changed many a time. And part one of those merges resulted in the benefits, my 401k being the company that was, taking care of our 401k. Basically, they retired working with that particular vendor and they went with a new one. And so they encouraged me, make sure you roll this over. You know, it's your choice, but make sure you roll it over. I'm like, okay, would I rather roll over my 401k into a company retirement account where it will be tied up until or if I leave my job and I will never have control over what it really invested in other than which index fund ultimately it's invested in? Would I rather that, or would I rather take that and move it into an account where I know exactly where that's being invested and where I know I can achieve returns that are much greater than the stock market can yield in a traditional 401k? The answer was pretty obvious. So I took my 401k and I rolled it over into what's called a solo 401k, which allows me to direct my investments to the types of investments I want to be involved in. So I don't know where you're at politically if you're listening to this. So not to get too political, because that's not the point of this podcast, but to get political for just a moment, I don't like investing in companies that don't like my values. When I invest in an index fund and I have to put my money into a company that, you know, is just part of that index fund and I'm contributing to their growth, to their prosperity, I don't love that idea. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying I don't love that idea. I don't even know half the time who I was investing in my 401k, but now I know. I know who I'm investing in. I know their names and I have their cell phone numbers and I know what exact assets my money is going into. I prefer that. And you know what it's going into? It's going into homes that are, you know, not in great shape. My money goes into that home and somebody goes and takes my money and uses it to fix up that property into something that is now usable for someone to buy, an end buyer to come in and buy it and own a home. I would much rather my money go into that kind of an investment. And you know what's even better about it is that I consistently receive monthly interest that surpasses my returns on my current work 401k, because I do still have a work 401k. I don't contribute much to it, but it surpasses the returns on that by a solid 8%. So I would much rather do that. And you know what? If you would like to do that too, you should hit me up and I'd be happy to tell you the things that have taken me months and months to learn and I would be happy to give you that shortcut. So hit me up if you're interested in how in the world I got that money rolled over into a solo 401k. And you know what? I can help you figure out what kinds of investments to put it into that are going to yield you much higher returns than you'll ever get in the stock market. And I realize there's going to be some people who will argue that and point to their annualized rate of return, you know, a couple years ago or even last year or whatever. And yes, you're going to be able to point to an annualized rate of return for like 1 year that's sitting at 30% or 15%, but no one, I'm sorry, I just don't buy it. No one can point to a 401k that's made them 30, 35% year over year for a decade straight. It's not real. Unless you are investing in individual stocks yourself and you are personally managing those individual stocks, yeah, you might be able to day trade your way into those kind of things, but your general retirement account is never going to yield you massive returns. The typical rate nationwide is between 6 and 8%, and over the last several years, the best yield that we've seen over, I think it's the last 5 years, was about 4%, which is not a whole lot better than a CD. So where am I at today? Where does this bring me to? This week, my business partner and I unveiled our partnership and highlighted the specialized loans that we offer. We provide fast, flexible, asset-based funding to businesses or investors who need access to quick cash and need significant capital. Our focus is on assisting real estate investors, business owners in swiftly leveraging equity in their real estate portfolios. And these are short-term loans, typically lasting 6 months or less. So if you require capital and possess significant equity in one of your assets, we can help you out. And we can give you access to fairly significant capital. So, if you're in a situation where you need access to the capital, hit me up. Happy to help you out with that. Also, to my connector friends, if you're listening, we did an event last Wednesday where we talked specifically about the types of deals that we are doing. I would love to get you the replay link for that, so you can hear what types of deals specifically we are searching for. And if you are a connector and you are interested in collaborating and getting paid for these kinds of deals, then hit me up for that replay link. I'll get it to you, and we would love to work with you and get you paid for bringing these types of deals our way. Finally, as I mentioned before, you know, about your 401ks, if you're interested in getting your retirement accounts invested into assets that are producing much higher yields than the stock market, even if it's not in a 401k, if you're just sitting on cash that's not working for you and you want to get much better and safer returns, then you should reach out to me. It took me, like I said, months and months of research and networking to get in front of these types of opportunities, but it doesn't have to take you that long. Reach out to me if you'd like to hear about more about opportunities to get your money growing for you. We can definitely get you double-digit returns. You'll hear a lot of people say that. I can get you double-digit returns backed by real estate. I can actually do that. I can keep you safe with highly secured loans that you can invest in to get significant returns on your money. So as we kind of come to the end of this time, this episode, I want to leave you with a few thoughts here. I hope my story has been inspiring to you. I hope it will continue to be inspiring as you see me continue to reach new levels in this journey. I will do my best to be transparent, because for me, one of the main reasons I am doing this is to help others, right? It's called Nursing Real Wealth. Why? Because I want to speak to the nursing audience. These are people that I love, people that, you know, I want to see be successful. And even if you want to stay in your career, right, as a nurse or any other W-2, but you want to have another way, another option for investing, I want to be a reliable location for you to seek out that information and to have those opportunities. So I hope that my story will continue to inspire you. But with that said, I don't want you to walk away from this thinking that it was super easy for me. So if you're starting down this path, I don't want you to think that this was super duper easy and that it was no sweat. Okay. It has been challenging for sure. It's been long days. You know, I work my W-2 for 8 hours a day, and then I work my second job, which is this, for another 4 to 6 hours every day for the past solid year, right? Because I know and I see the reality of the opportunities that are available. I have friends who are living this right now. Good friends who are living this. And it will be me very soon. So I guess I just want you to know that if you start down this path, it is going to be challenging. It is going to have work. It's not just, you know, an overnight get rich quick scheme at all. It's going to take time and consistency. And to those of you who are on your entrepreneurial journey and feel like giving up because you haven't seen results yet or haven't made money, then this is for you. Success is not a sprint. It's a marathon. So keep going. Your breakthrough is just around the corner. And don't be afraid to pivot. Okay. Sometimes the path to success requires a change in direction. So in conclusion, I want to leave you with this. No matter where you are on your journey, whether you're feeling trapped in a career that does not fulfill you, or you're struggling to see results in your entrepreneurial endeavors, remember that success is not a linear path. It is bumpy. And it's okay to face challenges and setbacks along the way. My own journey has been filled with plenty of obstacles and moments of doubt. But by staying committed to my goals, seeking out opportunities for growth, I will, by God's grace, create a life that aligns with my values and my passions. So keep pushing forward, keep learning, keep believing that you were created with the ability to do this. And thank you for listening. Have a great day, and God bless.